We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home, and we're up to the fifth chapter, the fifth Mishnah. And the Mishnayot had been enumerating different things that revolve around the number 10. So now we're up to the fifth Mishnah, Asara Nisim Nasu La'avoteinu Bevet HaMikdash. There were 10 miracles that happened for our forefathers, for their benefit, in the temple. And you'll notice there were other miracles in the temple. These were 10 that were there for our benefit. And these were 10 things which are not mentioned in any verse, and that's why the Mishnah has to mention them. Lo hipila isha mereach besar hakodesh. A woman never miscarried from the smell of the holy meat, meaning you'd walk up to the temple, you'd smell a barbecue. There was a lot of meat burning up there on the altar. And sometimes a pregnant woman could develop a strong desire for that meat. And we have a halacha that says that if a woman develops a strong desire for meat that she smelled, then that desire can cause her stomach to contract, and it could cause her to miscarry. And that's why the halacha says that if a woman on Yom Kippur feels herself having very powerful pangs of desire for meat or some other food that she smelled, so we whisper to her, we tell her it's Yom Kippur, and if that calms her down, fine, and if not, we feed it to her. And the Gemara says there was once a woman who had that, and they told her it's Yom Kippur, and the stomach calmed down, and that baby turned out to be a big Talmid Chacham. And there was another woman whose stomach would not calm down. She kept wanting that meat, and they fed it to her on Yom Kippur, and the kid ended up being a troublemaker who collected a lot of money from the Jews. So the Chazal saw it as a reflection of the baby, not only the woman. Now, if a woman would have entered the temple and smelled the meat and said, oh, I got to have from that meat. If we didn't have any regular meat available, we would have given her from the meat on the altar. We would have given her from that barbecue meat, even though it's prohibited. But we say the danger of the fetus is more important. We would have run up to the altar and sliced off a piece of meat and given it to her. We try to calm her down, but if not, we would have given it to her. Now, if that would have been the case, then pregnant women would not have entered the temple because they'd have to worry, maybe I'll smell the barbecue and then they'll have to give it to me. And you see how Hashem was thoughtful of the women. A special miracle, so that women who are pregnant can enter the Temple Mount. A special miracle. Ordinarily, it was a common thing in those days that a woman would smell barbecue meat and her stomach would go wild. Now, in order to understand this, maybe we have to understand better what their diets consisted of. They would have two meals a day, breakfast and supper. And their breakfast could be a slice of bread. They were heavily undernourished. So when a person that's very hungry and she's pregnant, and she walks by and smells some barbecue meat, you can understand that her stomach starts going mad. Today we don't have that, because we don't live on those levels of nourishment. We don't live like they did, but in Chazal's time they did. And you see that Hashem made a special miracle out of consideration for the women, so that women wouldn't have to think twice about coming into the temple. They say that Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's wife, she should live and be well, they say that she had numerous pregnancies where she was bedridden. She couldn't leave her bed. She was on bed rest, forced bed rest. So one time it was snowing, and she saw her husband come into the room and start fidgeting with the mirror. So she asked him, "What you're doing?" So he said, "Well, it's snowing outside, and you're not allowed to get out of bed to see the snow, and the window is behind you. So I'm trying to figure out a way of transferring the mirror in front of you so you can look in the mirror and see all the snow that's falling out the window behind you." Consideration. That's where a person has to strive for. To think about the nuances of where the other person's holding. We're very good at realizing what we want. But we see here how considerate Hashem was of what they want. The Torah says, before the Torah was given, Hashem told the Jewish men, you must separate from your wives for 3 days before the Torah was given. Why is that? Because here we're going to have the greatest monumental connection between Am Yisrael and Hashem. And if people are intimate, so we have a tradition that for 3 days, it can still happen that the seed comes out of the woman and causes her to be defiled. So what would happen? The husband, he could go to mikveh right afterwards and be pure, but the wife, she might end up being defiled and left out. So Hashem says for 3 days we all have to separate from our wives so that no woman would be left out. And if you look closely throughout the Torah and throughout the Shas, you will see fantastic care was given for the woman's feelings. In many instances, there are many places you'll see it. So here we see the first miracle that's enumerated, a miracle in the temple that no woman ever miscarried from the smell of the meat that was being barbecued on the altar. And this was the great consideration that Hashem had to make this miracle so that women would be comfortable entering the temple mount. Number two, v'lo esriach b'sar ha-kodesh me'olam. When you brought meat to be sacrificed, so certain sacrifices could be eaten for 2 days after you sacrificed them. They didn't have refrigeration. So what would prevent the meat from spoiling? Miracle. The meat of the temple never went bad. V'lo nira zvuv b'vet ha-mitbachayim. Ordinarily, you guys ever go to the shuk where they have they're slicing up the meat? The second they slaughter the animal, the second later there are a million flies around it. In the temple, should have been that the Beis HaMikdash was filled with flies. You have meat there all around. Special miracle. You never saw a fly in the room where they'd slice up the meat. What's the idea behind it? Hashem cared for that nuance. Here the Kohanim are dedicated. They're there, they're slicing up the meat on our behalf, they're serving Hashem on our behalf, they shouldn't have to deal with flies all around. Now, think about it. How many times does a woman come home with meat and say, oh, I got to cut up this filthy meat, who wants to cut it up for me? And everyone walks away like they didn't hear. She's going to do the cooking, she's going to do everything else. What's the big deal that the husband should slice up the meat? What's the big deal that the husband should take out the garbage? There are little tasks that husbands think are big tasks, but in comparison, they're really very little. But that goes back to an attitude. Very often we think we're coming home to our castle. So I'm the king. I'm the king of the castle. The king of the castle doesn't have to take out the garbage. No, you're coming home to your second job. She's been working hard. You've been working hard. Even if she doesn't have a job, per se, even if... her job is bringing up the house and taking care of the house. She's had a tough day. So at the end of the day, she's as tired as you are. The Torah, Hashem made miracles to take into account people's feelings and how hard they're working. So the Kohanim in the temple won't have to deal with flies as they're dealing with the meat. It's a miracle. It's unnatural, but it's important. And again, we're supposed to learn from the ways of Hashem these added sensitivities. We know that the Kohen Gadol, the service revolves around him on Yom Kippur. And if the Kohen Gadol would have a keri where he'd have an emission, so then he'd be defiled and he wouldn't be able to do the service of Yom Kippur. So the fact that he's defiled, well, that could happen. But for everyone to know that he had an emission, that's not nice. It's embarrassing. So Hashem made a special miracle. And here we see a few interesting points. Firstly, we see that we're all human. So the Kohen Gadol is going to have 7 days where he's away from his wife. That's how they prepare the Kohen Gadol for Yom Kippur. So it's possible that this would happen to him. And even though we have a biblical mitzvah not to have improper thoughts by day, so we won't come to have improper dreams at night, nonetheless, human beings, every so often it happens to them. And here you see in the Mishnah, considers it a miracle. All the Kohanim Gadolim were married, but yet they're going to spend 7 days away from their wife in the temple. So nature would have it that it should happen every so often. And yet it was a miracle. It didn't happen. And here we see the consideration, again, that Hashem makes a miracle not to embarrass him. He's, say it, you know, take care of yourself. No. Again, this goes back to the concept of chesed, where we've discussed many times that chesed means I don't think what's your responsibility and my responsibility. I think, how can I help you? If I started thinking, do I owe it to you, do I not owe it to you, then Rivka standing at the well would say, he's a big husky fellow, what am I schlepping all these buckets of water for him? Rivka standing at the well and she says, I'll feed your camels. Chesed is about giving. It's not about calculating, do they deserve. If you start calculating, do they deserve, so then you're never going to do anything. And no one will ever do anything for us. Who deserves it? That filthy bum. You know how many things I already did for him? What's she talking about? You know how many things I did for her? And the nature of things is that about a year or two after marriage, you start feeling like I'm doing everything here. The nature of things is that at some point after the marriage, it could take you a week, it could take you a month, it could take you 2 years. At some point you start thinking, why am I doing so much? And that's where people enter the phase where marriage is no fun at all. And they could stay there for the rest of their lives. Or they could realize that marriage is the focus of what can I give? It's not about does the other side deserve it at all. I'm investing in the marriage. And in every relationship, there are going to be times where I'm carrying the relationship on my shoulders.
It's boring, you know? It happens for the entire life.
No.
It's not boring?
No.
You know that you're giving and you're not getting anything back, probably a kick?
No. I'll tell you the truth. There are two approaches to answer that question. One is the educational, and the second is the truthful one. So I'll begin with the educational one, and then I'll undo it with the truthful one, okay? The educational one is, every marriage is like that, and in order to make a marriage work, you have to be willing to do it your whole life. There's no other way that marriage can work. And when you get married, you're getting married with that in mind, that you're going to do everything to make this marriage work, which includes carrying the other one on your back. There's no difference if your wife tells you, I'm tired, honey, could you deal with supper? And then she says, I'm tired, honey, could you deal with breakfast? And then she says, I'm tired, honey, could you go pick up the kids lunchtime? If you could do it, you do it. You'll say, why is she so tired? I did supper. She should at least have koach for breakfast. I did supper and breakfast. She should at least have koach for lunch. No, you got married with that in mind. You're getting married with the knowledge that you might carry the whole thing on your back. If that person, God forbid, would become an invalid, you wouldn't hold it against them. You'd say, okay, this is what God wished us, and so we'll make it work.
You're married to someone. You're not just married to yourself.
I'm married to someone, so it's my responsibility to that someone to be willing to do 100%. Not 50%. 100%. Right? We're accustomed to this concept of fairness. I do 50, you do 50. No, you do 100%. You do as much as you can do within the system. Now, that's the educational approach. In real life, what really happens is that we're a bunch of spoiled, slimy creatures, and we don't begin to appreciate what our spouses do. And all we see is that minute of, oh, I wanted to get to bed, now she wants me to give supper. Oh, I had such a hard day. We know how to feel very badly for ourselves. But in real life, the truth is that we don't begin to appreciate what our spouses do. And so we come with this concept of 50-50. Do you know what it's like to carry a baby in your stomach? Do you know what it's like to vomit? Do you know what it's like to nurse? Do you know what it's like to have the emotional turmoil of dealing with a slimy, creepy, crawly creature like me? You don't know. But you're just the fact that our wives have to deal with us, we don't know how much strength that takes out of them. And I'm not exaggerating. Hashem made women so as they're more sensitive. They're more sensitive, and we don't naturally treat them right with their sensitivities. And sometimes a classical story, a wife comes and starts teasing her husband. So the husband does what he does to a fly. He doesn't whack her, but he basically waves her away, you know? Leave me alone. What do you want? What's she doing? She wants attention. So she comes to him and she starts doing all kinds of shtuyot. What happened today at work? Leave me alone. I'm answering emails. Who emailed you that email? What do you care who emailed me that email? You want to come read it? You know, she comes and she starts picking at him all kinds of things that he can't figure out what she wants from his life. And so his response is like a fly were bothering him. He tries to wave her away, you know. It's okay. She gets offended. She gets offended. He comes back and says, what are you offended about? I don't understand. You think it's logical what you just did? He doesn't understand her. Now she's out for 3 hours. What are you out for? Go make lunches for the kids. Why am I going to make lunches for the kids? He doesn't begin to understand her. So the true answer is that every husband is going to view his scenario. He's going to be completely confident that in his scenario, she's taking advantage, she's a lazy bum, she's who knows what, and why do I have to put up with so much? The true answer is that I can't trust any husband, because 99.999% of them, which means there's going to be 1 in 10,000, and I don't think it's you, is going to have a wife that's really lazy. But most of the time, the husband just doesn't begin to appreciate what she's doing. And in order for it to work, and in order for us to reach the point where I can appreciate it, I have to first put on blinders and do my thing. I can't look at what she's doing. I have to do my thing. I did my thing over time. It might take 2 years, it might take 10 years. Then you come back and appreciate what she's really done. And I've seen couples go this route many times, that the husband comes and says, is it normal that I do this much in the house? Is it normal that she sleeps this much, she rests this much, and all kinds of things along these lines? And so long as you could convince him it's normal, just put on blinders, you do your thing, over time he comes to an appreciation. Wow, she's doing so much. Wow, I never realized it. But that's the true answer. It's not the educational answer. The educational answer was the first answer, because the true answer is something which you won't believe me. When you'll be in your first years of marriage, you're going to look and you're going to say, no, I see what she's doing. She's dumb. She's wasting time. You're going to have a million answers why it's not that way. That's why I gave you both. Yes, Uri.
Please correct me if I'm wrong here, but that's why, this is just my own personal take on it, that when dating a woman, it's important to look for a woman you can communicate with and know and understand to the degree what she wants, because the more a couple can communicate with each other, not just talk, but understand each other, the better it is. Like, if I understand what she wants, if I get to that level of communication where even though she doesn't tell me explicitly what she wants, I can still kind of sense what she wants, it would be better than marriage. I mean, if there's no communication, then it gets to be, like you said, like, well, what does she want from me? I don't understand what she wants. I don't get what she wants. What's this, what's that? And they're not communicating with each other. They just sat down and they say, no, this is really what it's all about. This is what it's really about. This is what I really want. This is what's really important. So if you have that someone that you're really communicating with, that's really important. Is that something that to look for, or is that secondary? Is it wrong to think that's important?
I'm just contemplating if it's legitimate in this setting to give you the real answer to your question. You won't take me literally, okay? But the truest answer to your question, in my humble opinion, is that that would work perfectly if men would marry men. So long as we're marrying women, and that's the way Hashem created the world, we're supposed to marry women, right? So that's a theoretical approach that might work during the dating, and I definitely agree that during the dating you try to find someone who you could communicate well with. But once you get married, then it's going to play itself something like this. You understood? No, what do you want? You didn't say anything, right? Oh, so you don't understand me, do you? But you didn't say anything. Just tell me what you want. Poor Uri, he's begging. I thought we had this thing going. We're communicating. Well, Uri, I'm okay. There's nothing wrong. You guys will get that line when you're married. Your wife says, everything is perfectly all right. Okay? And you know that it's not perfectly all right. And then you say, what's wrong? And she says, I told you everything's fine, right? Just don't ask me for supper, okay? Okay, you, what you're saying is true in a theoretical world. In a realistic world where you're marrying a woman, so the pasuk says that Hashem said to Eve, "Ve'elishech teshukatech." You will have a desire for your husband. And Chazal interpreted that pasuk to mean you will have a desire that will remain in your heart, but part of your nature is going to be that you will not verbalize it overtly. Part of a woman's nature is that she does not come straight off. And you know what? If she did, you would have a problem with it. I know there's a couple where the wife walks over to the husband and says, "Honey, I need a kiss." Tell me what you do then. Yeah, it sounds good, right? No, Hashem, right, sure, yeah. And then she says, "But I need you to mean it." Okay, now, Hashem created us that we have no problem saying that. We have no problem being overt and direct. And they are more modest. And their forms of expression are more complex. And they expect us to understand what they mean. And we don't. And they express themselves in a way that is far from overt. And we get frustrated by it. A woman says, "Fine, don't make the kids lunches." So the husband is wondering, "What am I supposed to do now?" So if he goes and doesn't make lunches, she gets upset at him. If he goes and makes lunches, she says to him, "I told you don't have to make lunches." So then, what do you want?
You tell her, "No, I did it because I did it for you. And you do it over and over again. I did it for you, I did it for you, I did it for you."
It's more complicated than that. I'm just telling you this so you won't be surprised when you get there. Of course, when you're dating, you're looking for good communication. Of course, you have to try and have good communication. But Hashem created them that within their nature, they function differently. It's not it's against the woman's nature. And I'll tell you more than that. You'll hear a woman often saying, "I don't know why I have to beg." And the husband's going to say, "You didn't beg. I just asked you to tell me what you want." But for a woman to come from that point of insinuating and you catching the hint to the point where she has to overtly say it, for her that's begging.
Right. So would the solution then to be to continue to analyze their emotional expressions until it gets to the point where you can kind of sense what they want, developing a... I know it works the same way with my dog. Like, don't think this the wrong way.
I did. You definitely get better at it. You definitely learn. I mean, with time. But I just want you to be prepared for the fact that it takes time. And the perfect wife for you will take time. And it's one of the difficulties is that people have this imagined perfect couple. And they think that we're not it. Or it's not working between us. And it's not true. The perfect couple is a couple that's working at making it the perfect couple. And you get there over years of work. But there's no such thing. There's a saying in Hebrew, "En zug lo mutzlach, yesh zug lo mudrach." There's no such thing as an unsuccessful couple. There's such a thing as a couple that's unguided. Meaning, every couple can learn to be a successful couple, but it requires learning. Doesn't come naturally. What comes naturally is a ton of misunderstandings, like someone once said, the first year of marriage is like walking through a minefield. Mm-hmm. You take a step and suddenly boom, and then you tell yourself, "Okay, I shouldn't step there again." And then you walk another few steps, and then you realize you stepped on something else that explodes, and you say, "Okay, I shouldn't step on that one either." You learn with time. You learn, but the learning is difficult, and as marriage is the most beautiful thing in the world. It just takes time to ripen. The first few years, you're still learning. And you're expecting, you're telling yourself, hey, this was so perfect when we dated. I thought we were perfect for one another. How come it's not playing itself out that way? And the answer is, it is. This is how perfect marriages play themselves out. It takes time to learn one another. Part of playing itself out that way is that there are difficult moments, and there are moments where you're really hurting and trying to figure out, what do you want from my life? Well, what we're discussing here is that added sensitivity, to try and sense things beyond. And the stress here is that it's not about what she deserves. It's about what I have to do. And what I have to put in is to be the sensitive person. And whether she deserves it or not is completely irrelevant. I have to be sensitive. I have to do my best to make it work. V'lo chibu geshamim esh shel atzei hamaracha. The rains never put out the fire that was on the altar. Because if they would, they wouldn't be able to bring the sacrifices there. And then the Kohanim wouldn't be able to eat the meat from the sacrifices. Because the Kohanim could only eat the meat after the sacrifices meat. The meat was up on the altar and the fire had taken hold of it. So again, extra sensitivity. They're sitting there waiting for the meat. Hashem ensures that the fires are there, to that his portion gets burnt quickly, that the fires are ready for Hashem's portion, so to speak, so that the Kohanim aren't sitting there salivating over the food. I think I mentioned this numerous times, that I saw this by a friend of mine's house, but I think it's a correct idea. When the food comes to the table, you take the good portion, you put it for your wife, because the nature of things is that by the time she gets to the table, she gets what no one else wanted. Why should she get leftovers? She made the food. Let her get a good portion. So I think it's a nice custom that some people have, that when the food comes to the table, when the wife brings it or the kids bring it, they take the nicest portion and they put it on the wife's plate. Hashem says, the Mishnah says, Hashem took care that the Kohan wouldn't sit there salivating and the fire isn't there to take Hashem's portion, so to speak. And the wind never overtook the pillar of smoke. Again, the Kohanim are serving in the temple, so Hashem ensures that the smoke doesn't come down and go in their eyes. And this is a point to think about when it comes to all the projects your wife begs you to do, or all the suitcases she begs you to put away, or the attic she begs you to clean up. You see, Hashem made a special miracle out of consideration that when they're working, they shouldn't have smoke in their eyes. Pillar of smoke should shoot up and go its way, so that they're working down there, they should have it as comfortable as can be. And very often husbands have all these projects that are getting in the wife's way, and if they'd finish them, then her life would be so much easier to do them, to do whatever she's doing at home. I often say, if you're going to do it sooner rather than later. Why should you suffer before you do it? At the end of the day, you're going to pick up that stuff and put it in the attic. So do it today instead of a week from now. Why should you suffer for a whole week? You're going to put up a fan. You're going to buy an air conditioning this summer. So buy it in the beginning of summer. Don't wait for the middle of summer. I once went to buy a radiator in the middle of the winter, and they told me, everyone's coming now. I said, why is everyone coming now? They said, because there was a cold spell for a week, so everyone's coming now. You knew it's going to be cold. So buy it in the beginning of the winter. Why do you have to suffer a week and then buy it? No, I'm saying the same thing to myself, right? Ve'lo nimtza psul ba'omer, and there's the Omer sacrifice that after it's brought, everyone's permitted to eat the new grains. So again, this was another miracle that it was never disqualified, so that there would never be a delay. Everyone's salivating, everyone's waiting to eat the new grains. Hashem ensured that there would never be a disqualification in the Omer. So again, that's what we said. These 10 miracles are miracles of consideration. Uvishte alechem, the same thing, the 2 loaves of bread, that when you bring those 2 loaves of bread, after that you could bring the new grains in the sacrifices. Uvalechem apanim, which again, the bread, I think they call it in English the show bread. Once it would be disqualified, you can never fix it. Omdim tzvufin umshtachavim revachim. You know, even though when they'd stand in the temple, there it was tight. When they'd bow down, there was room for everyone. Why? Because when people would bow down, they would confess. And Hashem didn't want one person hearing the other person's confession. Every person should have their own privacy with Hashem. And this is a big thing in relationships too. People sometimes think that they're their spouse's mashgiach, that they have a role in their spouse's connection to Hashem. Hashem wanted us to have our space, even in the temple. You could stand, special miracle, that when you bow, no one else is within your dalet amos. Very often when people come to me and say, I want to share with you something I did wrong, I say, wait. In Judaism, there's no such thing as a confession. You make confession to Hashem, not to me. But if you think there's a worthwhile reason, if you really think so, fine, I'll hear it. But the truth is, ideally it's between you and God. I don't belong there. And the same thing between spouses. Even though we are partners in our spiritual building, we also have to know to give one another autonomy. We are each serving Hashem in our own way. A serpent, a snake, and a scorpion never harmed in Jerusalem. No one ever said, it's too tight that I should be able to sleep in Jerusalem. Even though Jerusalem was packed and people came, nonetheless, Hashem made a special miracle that people would always have a place to stay, however that works. So, we'll pick up here, Bezalel Hashem, next week. I can't.